Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The name's Flop. James Flop. Welcome to Flop Culture. Welcome back to Flop Culture, a podcast where we mainly talk about flops, but we also talk about bops, pop culture, celebrities, everything in between. My name is Fionnuala J. I'm delighted to have you along for the ride. If you're new and you're confused as to what constitutes a flop, never fear, you can hear me break it down on the very first episode of Flop Culture with DJ Louis the 14th. A great episode if you haven't listened yet. If you're not new, I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. Quick correction corner right up top. That Bling Ring documentary that we talked about is on All Four, so you can stream that over here. It is technically streaming on American Netflix, so I was technically right, but I was also technically wrong. And it's important to acknowledge those things. So go forth and watch if you haven't already. Before we get into this week's flop with my wonderful guest, let's take a look at the news. Molly Mae Hague is having a baby. Wow, talk about Keelan Moncrief's impact. Am I right? Molly Mae Hague is having a baby with Tommy Fury. They obviously met on Love Island, so this is particularly exciting for me. Shared the news on Instagram this week with a video showing a clip of Hague saying, "I can't wait for the adventures that we haven't even dreamed of yet," from her finale speech during their time on the dating show in 2019. Season 5, love prevails. I wonder what they will call it. That's what I have been thinking about this last week or so, because I'm thinking they might do like an amalgamation of the two names. And I saw someone else on Instagram pointed out that, you know, their names together already are Mommy. It's pretty convenient, given that they have decided to have children. So I was trying to come up with a combo of their names. So I was thinking maybe Monty Cam, Molten Peace. Anyway, good for them. I love a Love Island baby. All very posy. Less posy news, in a way, I suppose. I feel neither positive nor negative about this story. More men cheating. What a concept. The Try Guys. Do you know them? Are you familiar with them? Have you been scratching your head this past week looking at the news cycle and looking at what has been trending on the internet? And have you been feeling quite old? That's fair, because I think this story is bamboozled. You're either on one side of the camp, right? This has either devastated you, shook you to your very core, or you have been Googling what is a Try Guy, right? So they are a comedy group called the Try Guys. They got their start actually in BuzzFeed. And I mean, essentially, the clue's in the name. It's just them kind of doing things. So the group is made up of four guys trying things. Ned Fulmer, Keith Habersberger, Zach Kornfeld, and Eugene Lee Yang. They were video producers at BuzzFeed. They started a new series in 2014 in which they would go and try stuff. So it was like you trying on women's underwear, getting their sperm count checked. A recent one that I just saw fully from the algorithm searching was one of them went and tried everything at a specific buffet. And they became hugely popular off the back of that series, kind of made a name for themselves. They left BuzzFeed in 2018, formed their own production company called Second Try. And it's just grown and grown and grown since. They've nearly 24 employees as of 2021. And most recently, they had a show on Food Network called No Recipe Road Trip that premiered literally August of this year, right? So let's go back to Ned. Ned is one of the aforementioned Try Guys, but he has now since been ousted from the Try Guys. He is no longer allowed to be a guy or to try because he had a consensual workplace affair. And this news came out after photos of him kissing this employee that worked, I think, at Second Try or was some way involved, whatever way, with the Try Guys. Photos of them kissing were leaked on Reddit. So fans had kind of already twigged something was up because on their most recent videos, he's caught out of a lot of them. He's caught out of images for their merch launches, everything like that. So people thought something was up, right? So by the time of recording, we'll just say this week anyway, the guys released a statement saying Ned Fulmer is no longer working with the Try Guys as a result of a thorough internal review. We do not see a path forward together. We thank you for your support as we navigate this change. Ned came out with a statement of his own saying, family should always have been my priority, but I lost focus and had a consensual workplace relationship. I'm sorry for any pain that my actions may have caused to the guys and the fans, but most of all to Ariel, who is his wife. He added, the only thing that matters right now is my marriage and my children, and that's where I'm going to focus my attention. Ariel Fulmer, his wife, wrote, thanks to everyone who's reached out to me. It means a lot. Nothing is more important to me and Ned than our family. And all we request right now is that you respect our privacy for the sake of our kids. Why is this significant, I hear you ask? Because as we learned, literally from last week's episode, people cheat on each other all the time. That doesn't make it right. It's a pretty commonplace, you know, thing that happens, regrettably, for some. I think what has made this or what separates this and what has, I mentioned the fan base being totally devastated by this. If you're not familiar with the Try Guys, Ned had kind of built this personality around being a wife guy, which is internet slang for one of those people who insufferably talks about their wife, mentions their wife, constantly going on about their wife. If you even look at their videos, which are monetized on YouTube, one of them on their Second Try channel is literally titled, Every Time Ned Fulmer Says, My Wife, Not Aged Well. And then you have other like fan compilations, best moments of Ned talking about his wife, Ned and Ariel being absolutely perfect. They co-wrote a cookbook together in 2021, the Date Night Cookbook. If you're to go through his tweets and search for the word wife, you will get umpteen results. It was kind of an in-joke for the fan base and even within the group themselves, because the wives even have their own separate, they're referred to as the Try Wives within the community. What if aliens came down right now and I had to try and explain this to them? That's what I'm imagining. Someone up there on Mars has an internet connection and is like, you know what? I want to listen to whatever these podcasts are called about flops. And they have to hear me try and explain this absolute insane, inane internet nonsense. But anyway, I think Vulture put it best. I saw this in their Instagram caption when they were sharing about the drama and kind of giving a breakdown on it. They said, it's a morality tale the internet keeps having to learn again and again. Don't bestow made up values on parasocial celebrity relationships and don't make wife guy your whole personality. So there we go. Who's to say where they're going to go from here? Are the guys going to keep trying? They're literally a try of guys now because there's three of them. Are they going to get a new guy? Is there going to be auditions for them? What's the screening process going to be like? Do you cheat on people? Yes. Okay. Sorry. Maybe you should audition for the Promiscuous Guys, Adam Levine's new band. I don't know. It is really interesting when you look at that take of why, because it's not that interesting. It really isn't. It's only that people had this idea of him based on a brand he built for himself and his wife and his family. But also, why did we feel a need to, and I say we, I did not participate in this at all. I was familiar with them. I wouldn't consider myself a fan or being a part of their community. But I suppose, why did the people who were engaged in that community feel a need to put that standard on him and then are so shocked when something like this comes out? It's mad, Ted. It is absolutely mad. That was kind of it. I listened to the Hailey Bieber Call Her Daddy podcast and didn't really glean anything that interesting, to be honest. And I really actually don't mean that as a dig at her, but I just, and nothing was said that I didn't already know, bar maybe that she has spoken to Selena Gomez, Justin Bieber's ex-girlfriend, since herself and Justin got married. But even at that, I'm a bit like, okay, I don't know. I was surprised she got into some of the sex questions as much as she did. But beyond that, as I find with most Call Her Daddy interviews, that trailer will get you in and then you listen and there's not a lot of meat in the bones per se in terms of the content. Anyway, let's talk flops, shall we? My next guest is one of the funniest comedians in Ireland right now, probably ever, and only one of two straight men that I've invited onto this season of Flop Culture. He should be so honoured. His pick is a movie that seems to be getting its day in the sun among James Bond fans and beyond over 50 years after its initial release. So here he is to talk the sixth Bond movie on Her Majesty's Secret Service. I'm delighted to be joined on Flop Culture this week by the wonderful Peter McGann. Peter McGann, thank you so much for joining me on Flop Culture.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm going to be honest, right? So when I emailed you and put the pitch out to you and you came back to me with your pick, I was a bit scared because I was like, I don't think I'm going to like this. It's just not really for me. But I'll tell you what, I fucking loved this. What did you pick for anyone listening at home?
I picked the James Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
So good. So good.
It is unbelievable. And I looked at it. It is actually technically not a flop in terms of like losing money, but it made way less money than it should have. And it's all tied into your man, George Lazenby, who plays Bond. That's what kind of the idea of him being the flop, I guess, rather than the actual film.
Yeah. When did you watch it? When did you first encounter on Her Majesty's Secret Service?
Years ago, Network 2 would do...
That's where everyone watches all the Bond
literally
movies.
Wednesday nights would do like the Bond seasons. And I watched it there, but I remember it like... So I obviously stopped watching it up to a point. So like my memory of it was this really long, boring film where not much happens. And...
That's every child's understanding of Bond, I think.
Exactly.
And there's like sexy ladies and they'd be kissing. And then it's like, then there's a bit of shooting and then there's boring bits in the middle.
Pete wanted was just the shooting and the gadgets. But that was my first thing of it. And then I got really into Bond in that kind of really sad, nerdy way.
Okay.
A few years later. And then that film had not a good reputation. And then I watched it. And then over the years, I was like, this is kind of the best one in a weird way. But I think it is the best one because your man, no one had any faith in him whatsoever. None of the guys making it. So they put all the, in a way that they hadn't been doing with the other films, they put all their kind of effort into making everything else around him better. So like the actors and the sets and the action or whatever. So I think that's why, even though it's considered lesser or, you know, not a failed attempt, I think it's like, good because of that, almost.
Yeah, because that's it. Like my only knowledge of this movie was like George Lazenby was like an eternal table quiz answer in my head. You know, like who's the only Bond who's only ever done it once?
Yeah,
like I'd never watched the movie. I'm not a big Bond person, admittedly, at all. I think I've watched all of Daniel Craig's bar Spectre, and then I have a vague memory of watching Pierce Brosnan and the Halle Berry one ages and ages ago.
And then I've watched bits of the others. And it's not that, you know, I feel like some people have like very strong opinions on Bond, and the, like, especially now where it's like, it's so outdated, yeah, and like, but whatever, blah, blah, we need to make more work, whatever. But I just, it was always one of those like franchises that it's like, if it's on at Christmas, I'll watch it. I can absolutely understand the appeal of it, because especially in the modern day, like, it's very slick, a lot of action, hot people. Should tick all the boxes for me. But this was very interesting and kind of not what I was expecting at all from Bond. Can you run people through like the rough plot?
I will. First of all, without spoiling it, did you know the ending, the kind of famous ending?
No, I did. And when I said it to producer Adam coming in, when I said this was the topic, he was like, is that the one where, and he said it, and I was like, yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, like, I know. And again, I watched it last night. You kind of forget just how abrupt it is.
We will spoil it at the end. Oh, yeah, so if 100%. You want to, if you want to watch it, this is your spoiler warning now, okay? Yeah, yeah. Just FYI. But yeah, I was gooped and gagged, to be honest. But that kind of made me love it even more, because it was just like, I don't know, it was like, it's a bit of a head fuck of a movie in the best way.
Completely. And like, I can't imagine being in the cinema back then, like 96, 97, seeing that after the last, you have the first few Bond movies, and then you've got this whole new actor in playing it, and then it gives you exactly what you expect, and then like the most shocking kind of ending. Like, it must have been mind blown. But it's about basically it. So George Lazenby, Connery made the role, and he did a couple of films, and was checked out. He didn't want to do it anymore, so he quit. And then they got this like non actor. He was like a model. He was in like, what are those chocolate bars? You know, the mint kind of
Aero? Hershey's.
No. Sounds like Hershey's.
Fries, they're cream. Yeah, yes. They're vegan. Yeah.
He was, oh.
They might not have been back then, but they are now. There you go. There's another bit of useless information for everyone.
I like it. So he was vegan. He was a vegan model. No, he was doing, like, I think that his one on-screen thing was like a fries commercial.
Yeah.
And then he looked the part. They got him in. They did screen tests forever. They're like, I guess they must have thought that the part at this stage was so iconic that they could probably just kind of find someone who looked the part and then just kind of...
That it wouldn't matter as long as they were like handsome and fit a certain... Which he does. Like,
he absolutely does.
I think he absolutely looks the part as Bond.
That chin dimple. I'd kill for it.
The bum chin. I could not stop looking at it. Anyway, yeah, obsessed.
But I'd say another thing, ironically, for Outturn, I'd say they were like, they didn't want to have another Connery thing on their hands where they get an actor in who's like... who starts to get ideas above their station. So they probably got this lad there, like, he's just going to be happy for the work, for the role. And but they just stack the deck so much in the film's favour, because basically the common kind of thing is like, oh, how good would it be if it was Connery?
Yeah.
The book, it's one of the best books that they based the film off. And like, they stuck real close to the book, which they hadn't really done for the last few films. And so it's more like character-y than the last few. But it was, the idea is like, oh, imagine an actor like Connery doing that part, it would be way better. But I don't think it would have been, because I don't think they would have made the effort, because they got Connery back for the next one, and it's like the laziest, most like self-satisfied one. It's like Diamonds Are Forever. So like, they were clearly just like, oh, all we need is either Connery in it to just go around and do the shtick, or actually make an effort when they don't have him. So like, the film itself, it's like, it's the most ridiculous plot. Like, could you follow it? Like, I was watching last night. I was like, I've seen it so many times.
Sometimes I'd be tuned out if I was doing something for work, and it was like something about earlobes. I was like, right, I need to go back now, because I've just missed it. And then he gets to the clinic, and like all the sexy girl. I was like, I'm back in. Yes, I don't care what's going on. This looks so good.
Exactly.
This is so camp. I love it. Like,
camp,
it's demented.
Exactly.
But I suppose Bond isn't known to be realistic. You know what I mean? At all,
no.
Throughout the whole franchise. So
no.
I mean, whatever, like, leave those kind of expectations at the door, I suppose.
Exactly. And like, that's what I think is so impressive about it, is like, it can pull off an ending like it has, and then it also has like, the bad guy's plan is to hypnotize a load of hot women from different parts of the world to go off it. Like, it's also parachute to go off into the world and like unleash like bacterial warfare or something, like basically a virus that makes everyone sterile. So like, that's what you're dealing, like, it's, you're dealing with tones that could not be further from each other, but I think it pulls it off. Like, again, it's like what people don't like about this film, but I think it works, all works. But like, yeah, so it's like typical Bond thing. He's hunting down Blofeld, the kind of head villain of the first couple of films, and he kind of tracks him to this Switzerland where he's like trying to find out what he's doing. So he infiltrates him as a genealogist who's, as because Blofeld's researching his family history or whatever, and which is all very believable. And but the kind of the main kind of plot of the film or relationship with the film is he ends up hooking up with the daughter of this crime boss that's helping him track down Blofeld, and she's this very kind of like independent kind of tortured soul, and she's played by Diana Rigg. And up to that point, like if you Google any of the Bond girls in the other films, there was always like Miss Italy 1963, never acted before, never acted since, like they just got in, you know, a beautiful woman of the moment kind of thing. But this, they got Diana Rigg, who's like this stage actor, like hardcore, like gorgeous but like proper actor. And again, you kind of feel like that was kind of to buffer him.
Because she'd even said that herself in interviews, that it was like because Lazenby was so inexperienced that like they needed her as this like anchor.
Exactly, like so their scenes wouldn't just kind of fall apart, and like you need to sell the ending and all the rest of it, and that whole relationship. Because it's famous, it's the one basically, the one where Bond gets married. The kind of famous fucking bachelor spy, and this is the one where he falls in love and gets married, which, and so you need someone where it isn't, just doesn't feel like they got, you know, someone from a, you know,
just someone in for the shag, like,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah. Which is like, they're in it.
Yeah.
Then once he gets to Switzerland, they're definitely in it. But there's...
I loved those scenes when he was just milling between the girls, telling them the exact same things.
Yes.
And she's writing the lipstick on his lip. I was like, yes!
I know.
It's so good!
It's like such a like British schoolboy's idea of like what would happen if I went into this like nest of beautiful women.
Yeah, truly.
They'd
like,
oh, be horny for me. Like, oh, my God. And like they said, it's like they're there for allergies, but like they just, it's like, oh, I'm allergic to chicken. That's the whole thing. Is like he's hypnotizing them to get them off their allergies. That's his like way of controlling these women. But like, surely you can't, if it's an actual allergy, you can't hypnotize someone because you're just going to have a reaction to it anyway.
Yeah.
You don't like.
It's fully, it's not a mental reaction. It's an actual exactly. physical, physiological reaction. And when they're all getting the presents at Christmas and everything, it's just, it's bonkers. It
is,
but I love it.
It is absolutely bonkers. And I was watching and I was like, thinking of you when I was watching, I was like, what am I on my butter tree? Like, I forgot, like, you forget so much for like the insane, like, 60s sexual politics of it all and like kind of.
Look, I'm sure a lot of it wouldn't fly in today's world, but there's some of it that I'm just like, let's just grab. It's more, I suppose, energy and like how it looks as well. It's like very, like, I don't know how to describe it because I don't have the filmmaker vernacular, but it's like very, did you know, like that gaudy, colourful. It's not what I expect from Bond. I feel like Bond, with, as it's gone on the years, gone a bit sterile, it's gone a bit like kind of too slick.
Yeah.
I suppose I kind of liked this because it got down to the brass tacks of like, there's a man, fundamentally, there's a man on a mission, he's in love, there's bad guys. That's all I kind of want. Like, we can leave the fucking gadgets and the, you know, the nooks and the crannies out of this. And I know other people really like that. And I just think there's a balance to be struck. But I just thought, I liked that it was a bit offbeat and a bit off kilter and inverted commas.
No, it is 100%. And like, even like structurally how the story's told, it's like, it's weird. Like, you know, you get to the bad guy's lair halfway through and then there's a big escape from it. But then they have to go back again. It's all like, there's kind of weird, kind of jaggedy structuring. But the look of it, what you're saying is like the director of it is a lad, Peter Hunt. He was the editor of all the other ones. And I think this was like his first film he ever directed. I could be wrong on that. Definitely no more than his second, but I think it was his first. But it was like he did his kind of editing kind of role on the first couple and then they gave him the direct film. So it just has a way better energy than the Connery ones and stuff, which were kind of, they're paced, you know, they're slower, they're kind of, everything's, you know, it just, they're less kind of dynamic, whatever, where you feel like he's directing it and he has the whole film in his head because he's an editor. So it's like transitions and like the pacings of scenes, like no, there's no fat on it, even though it is a very long film and it has like a lot of like characters and story, whatever. It doesn't, it actually moves. And I was watching, I was like, again, I thought I'd be way more checked out than I was because I knew it so well and seen it so many times. But I was bet into it. I was like, and it's because of his sense of pacing, which comes from being an editor, where everything is just, he's giving you all you need to know, you know, no more than that. And it's like moving like a rocket and you kind of know where, you know, the geography, like when he's coming up on the helicopter to the bad guy's lair, and they point out where there's like a fault with the snow, the whatever the kind of the avalanche point, and then they point out the bobsleigh thing. And like everything then, all of that stuff comes into play later. So you're never confused. It's all like everything is very laid out clearly in an editor's kind of mind. So I think that really helps.
Yeah.
And yes, and it has that kind of like the purples and the deep blues and reds, like that kind of psychedelic 60s kind of vibe, which can look dated and things, but in this I think it works really well.
Like, I just want to live in that like allergy gaff. Like that's literally the dream.
Yeah.
The dream.
I was watching, I was like, he could probably just keep up the pretense of who he was and just have the crack with the women and then just go back and say, I didn't find it.
I loved that whole thing, is just the undercover and like coming out in the shirt with all the ruffles and all the girls are like, the jaws hit the floor. Yeah. Like, and oh, it's so good. Let's talk a bit more about George Lazenby, because again, my full understanding of this was because the movie did shit in inverted commas, because it didn't. It made a lot of profit. It was I'm pretty sure it was the best performing movie of that year, or one of them anyway. But as you said, in comparison to the Connery ones, it didn't really do that well money wise. And it's had this, you know, like critically kind of mixed for a while. It's kind of coming into a new light now. Mm-hmm. I put this down to, you know, he only did one Bond because they were like, you're shit, you're sacked. But he actually left while they were doing it. Talk to me about that.
Basically, yeah. So like, I think it was a difficult shoot with him. And I think they probably were kicking themselves a bit. But they, you know, it is an investment at the end. It's like that, the new Bond is an investment and you can't like kind of, what, they're smart enough, they wouldn't want to walk away from it straight away, especially, you know, you kind of roll out the red carpet and the PR machine to build this guy up and then just to kind of, you're kind of admitting fault almost if they then just kind of went back on that. But yeah, he himself, he just kind of, he got it in his head. He's like, Bond, and when you hear it out loud, you're like, yeah, it is. Even, and it's kind of a testament to the team behind it, like the Broccoli's or whatever, because like, even in the 60s, even then, Bond was like out of date. He was like this kind of 50s, post-war, World War II, like dinosaur of a character, like drinking, smoking, like bachelor who works for like literally the queen. Like literally.
literally British, the queen.
Yeah. Like the clues in the title. So it's like you cannot get a more like uncool like character than that. And but then obviously this was in the earlier stages of the series, so he could see the 70s on the horizon and he had people in his ear that were just saying, it's like, this is not going anywhere. I think it was like a 5-film contract, which would make sense. I think he turned down signing a 5-film contract, which like is in like insane to
You'd
think.
Never hear of that. It's become this badge of honor to be like, and I feel like that was the thing when Daniel Craig took over the role and it was just like all eyes on him being like, how many is he going to do? And even I was kind of like counting them up as they were released, not going to see them, but I was like, right, yeah, so he's on whatever number, blah, blah, blah. Like it's unheard of. Like,
oh, completely unheard. Like, and like, you're basically guaranteed, like, they're guaranteed they're all going to get made. You're guaranteed they're all going to be hugely successful. So it was, he just literally, I don't know what kind of brazenness or like kind of defiance was in someone to be like, I not turn down that level of security or whatever. His manager, I didn't realize this until this last rewatch. His manager at the time was this Irish fella, Ronan O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And he got in his ear about this. And you're reading up about this guy and you're like, this guy sounds like the ultimate, like kind of, like a hustler kind of mentality.
Oh, fully, fully.
Like tied himself to all these kind of music movements and all the rest of it. But yeah, he got in his ear and he kind of, I'm sure there's other elements at play as well, but he basically was like, Bond is dead. You don't want to do this. Back this horse. And Lazenby did it and kind of stalled everything for him.
Yeah.
Like he had a fairly non-notable acting career after that. And a lot of it, or at least a fair percentage of it, was like kind of spoofing Bond or doing little Bond references. So that must have hurt. By turning down the real thing and then just kind of getting cast in like these like rip-offs or spoofs as kind of making fun of the character you kind of walked away from. Because production company couldn't afford Connery or Roger Moore to do.
And he'd even turned up to the premiere with long hair and stuff and proper, not looking like Bond, like looking like that new age hippy dippy, because he was just like, I want to be so separate from it. He did say in the article in the New York Times that I keep referencing, like, they have spoken to him since. And he's kind of said, now, it's also easy to say this, you know, because I'm sure there's a pride thing and everything else, but he's just basically said, now, he's acknowledged as well that, like, when you talk about his performance in the movie, he's like, I could have done better, but, you know, people were, I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, but he was like, I could have done better, but, like, people were slagging me, and I really didn't think I was that bad. I don't think he's that bad.
No.
But he's also just said, like, you know, he's been acting on and off all the time. You know, he just didn't, the only time I had regrets was when I was broke. He just said he didn't want to be known as James Bond, which I'm kind of like, I read that and I'm like, I love that you had that confidence just to talk, again, to step away from that, because you would just never hear of it now. Even like now, like there's this whole conversation now, like you'll still get a million hits out of it. A million hits, I sound 85 years old, but you'll still get, like, if you're writing up an article now about who's in contention for the next Bond, or like there's loads of talk around like Reggie Jean Page and like whether it's going to be a woman, blah, blah, blah. That's still such a conversation in mainstream media. Like, it boggles my mind.
No, it is. And I think if he was like, if they had cast an actor, I think that maybe that person would have more of a kind of a realistic view of things and be like, look, even if I don't want to be known as James Bond, I still, you know, this is good for me, and like to walk away from it does not, there's no guarantee of anything just because the spotlight's on you now and there's a hype around you now. But I think maybe because he wasn't an actor, maybe because he was really green, he was just like, well, this is how it's always going to be.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be Bond. So kind of walked away from it, which is kind of, I mean, I can't imagine he didn't kick himself. As you said, like, pride comes into it, and like probably years and years and years down the line, but like maybe I'm just projecting, but like I regret, like, we didn't, you know, turn it down, like fucking voiceovers for like some, like, like, you know, like, you know, like it's like, oh, I couldn't do this because I whatever, and you're like, if you lost out on like that and you saw where it went, you surely that was like,
yeah, surely you wouldn't be a little bit seething, like,
yeah,
a little bit seething.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why do you think it's having like another day in the sun now? Because like it's obviously 50 years, 50 odd since its release. You obviously picked this, but there seems to be, like, if you're to Google it, like, that conversation seems to be kind of like, it was like really unfairly maligned as a movie. Why is that?
I think it's because with the benefit now of the 50 odd years, you see how well it's aged as a film, as in, like, again, the direction of it, the way it's edited and the style of it, and like one of the best Bond songs, like the We've All the Time in the World, like, I think it's because everyone kind of just, there's enough distance now between it that you can put Lazenby to one side and just appreciate everything else, which is at such a higher level, in my opinion, than pretty much every other Bond until like Casino Royale. And like quality wise, it feels like a proper film with something to say, with a story to it, whereas the other Bonds, to varying degrees, they're all formulas. You know, there's a it's servicing nothing but the formula. Whereas this feels like there's a bit of blood in its veins and it's an actual film. So I think it's literally just the time that the last few decades have been that you can just kind of put him to one side and just kind of appreciate the component parts. And like, it has like kind of like Steven Soderbergh and Christopher Nolan, like kind of respected.
Yeah, Soderbergh came out and blogged about it and was like on Diana Rigg, basically saying that like she was the first Bond girl to not be a cartoon, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like she was an actually fully fledged character person, which I think comes across, definitely.
I do too. Like, again, like you're watching it and you're
and
like...
she's still a lash, I will say,
oh
as well.
Oh my God, her outfits are so
the,
cool.
With the wedding outfit is just... Oh, anyway, yeah, we could be here all day, but yeah, iconic.
No, she is like, she. It is like, to, for my money, the best Bond girl. And it is, it's like, she has the best Bond girl part. It's like the woman that he falls in love with and all. But there's more to it than that. She's like...
she's no Christmas fucking Jones, let me tell you. She's no relation of mine. Sorry, Denise Richards, fuck off.
That is, that's, when you're kind of retrofitting a character's name to fit the one-liner, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, truly, like, what, oh, yeah. Deranged. Is it your favourite Bond?
Yeah.
If you think George Lazenby isn't the worst Bond, who is the worst Bond?
I think he's the worst Bond. I do, like,
what the hell is this whole podcast for then?
No, because, I'll tell you, I think that the idea being that he's not terrible by any means, but like the film itself is redeemed because everyone's working hard around him.
Okay, that's fair.
Him.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of moving parts. Yeah.
I do think that he, I mean, like, yeah, like there's Connery and Craig are tied as the best.
Mm.
Then you got Moore, who is like, if I was sticking something on of a Sunday afternoon, it's gonna be a Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton is solid, solid.
Okay.
And Brosnan is, you know, solid, like, lazy. He is like, I. He
do,
is,
do we look at the? Do we look at that time period with like, you know, rose tinted glasses? Because obviously he's one of us. I suppose in inverted commas, he is Irish. I don't know why I did that. Do you know what I mean? Though that whole thing of like, sure, support your own, whatever. Yeah, but like,
no, I mean, he's there's some clangers in there. For me, Brosnan is. It's like when I started getting into Bond, he was Bond.
Yeah.
So those films, I have no objectivity with.
Yeah, fair. Really. Okay, fair.
But like, I'd love, like, I think they've aged the worst in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch The World's Not Enough, the kind of the suits he wears, there's something timeless about like the 60s and even the 70s, mm-hmm. the suits and all the rest of it. But Brosnan just looked like he's going to the AGM or something like it. Like he's kind of like, you know, like, it's like a blue shirt and then this kind of creamy like jacket and stuff, like awful stuff.
It's very hideous, yeah. Very hideous.
There's a bit where he's swimming in The World's Not Enough, like to trying to disarm a bomb in a submarine or something. And his shirt is tucked into like kind of cream chinos with a belt, but it's blue and he's swimming in it. And you're like, it's like you're looking at someone's dad swimming. It's some of the worst, it's the worst Bond's ever looked like. But
your
think,
dad's in the pool again.
Exactly, falling
in. Collect him.
But I think Lazenby, like, he just doesn't, he can't sell a line, a one-liner. He's surprised. I think he's good at he's best at like kind of the dramatic, more dramatic stuff. I think it's when he has to be like cool, suave Bond where he has to say a funny one-liner. I think that's where he doesn't have the real panache.
Mm.
But like he's probably the, outside of Connery, I think, yeah, he's the best looking one.
He's 100%.
He's a slab of a man.
Yeah. Like dazzling on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like very dazzling. What are your thoughts on the franchise now, and where do you see it going, and where would you want to see it going? Because that seems to be, again, we talk about the ongoing conversation around it.
Idris Elba was right there, but they just didn't go for it.
But like, okay, do you actually think it should be Idris Elba?
Yeah.
Why? Explain your answer, reference the text. And I love Idris. I feel like, well, actually, I take your point. I think there was a time where he would have been perfect. I think we've missed that. I think we've missed the window now.
I thought that, but then I kind of watched a couple of his films recently. Bond, ideally, and I don't, honest to God, they never had it after Connery. They were always like handsome, cool men with a presence, but like Connery is like electrifying in the first two. Then he's on autopilot. Connery gets basically all his goodwill from like the first three films, and then the three after that, he's just kind of autopilot, doesn't want to be there. But like, I think Idris Elba has that like thing that he has where it's just like, first of all, he's an actual dramatic actor, like a good actor, but also it's just like there's something like electric and like better than us mortals that he has, that I think Connery has as well. So, and like, is he, like, you could get an old Bond over it. Just Bond doesn't have to be mad young every time. I don't think he, how old
he's
is
not,
he?
Sorry, the way I was saying it made it seem like he's 800 years old. And it's not that, but I just think, I don't know, I just, there's a part of me that feels like we've been having the conversation for so long.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe I'm just a bit fatigued from it. I don't know.
It is, but like, it is like a conversation where you're like,
what is he even doing at the minute? Like, he's a fucking Knuckles in Sonic, a great role. No critique here for me, Sonic's number one fan. But he's not, like, I feel like he's even moved on from that. And I can appreciate that, because I probably, you know, when your name is in the conversation the whole time and then it's just like, because obviously we don't know what went on behind the scenes, whether he did audition, screen test, yada yada, whether he was never interested, mm-hmm. and your name is just constantly brought into it. I'd say there must be an element of like, I'm so fucking over this. Like, I'm done. Like, whether my ring was in that or not, exactly. I'm done.
And also, Daniel Craig seemed to hate it by the end. So he's probably looking at that and being like, life's too short, you know. I don't know, like, again, like, who's the next Bond? It's going to be, they're going to have to do something that isn't what it's been the last while. Like, they'll have
What about Reggie Jean Page? Did you watch Bridgerton?
No.
See, that's kind of the only reference. Like, he's in The Grey Man, which is coming out. Ooh. I don't know when this podcast is coming out, so it might be out when it is out, mm-hmm. but that's like blockbustery. Like, it's fucking Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
One of the Chris's. I can't remember.
Evans, I think.
Yeah, the nice Chris. You know, like, that action. You know, like, so I think we'll kind of get a better... I'm wondering if that's like a dry run for him.
Yeah.
Was there talks that your one, and I don't mean to say her one, her name just escapes me, in No Time to Die, that she was potentially moving into that?
And that
I'm going to Google her name while you talk.
That she, I think, I don't know, was that getting confused? Which she is 007 in the next one, because in the new one, because he's retired in it. So 007 is her mantle.
So that was just dummy media, not doing their research.
Lashana Lynch. She, like, she, that would be, my take on it is that it is something else when it stops being a man.
Sexist. Woo! See, got him! Ladies and gentlemen, we got him!
No, not that it is something, I suppose it's like,
to clarify, I actually completely accept your point. I hate the whole thing of like, make it a woman. Write a story for a woman that she's fucking a Bond-esque character. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not
kind of, yeah, or like.
But to play devil's advocate, I do get the significance of like, what, you know, gender identity. Gender is fucking boring. It doesn't exist. Do you know what I mean? So why can't it be a fucking woman or female presenting, whatever? Exactly. You know.
Oh, but, like, and like 100%, like, as in, it's, I suppose it's like it's the character more than the person playing it, that you're like, there are kind of fundamentals in my head, in my opinion, that just, so like, there's nothing to say. I don't know, you couldn't get an incredibly like a woman could play it, but like, I think there is like ways around it where you kind of keep the core of the character. But I think it is the thing of like, if you go kind of, they kind of have to have the kind of fundamentals where they're, you know, a snob, they drink too much, they are a womanizer or a manizer.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, I'm not against anyone playing it, so long as, I suppose, you're kind of, you want to be able to watch it and be like, ah, there's the character that, because it's not like there's any kind of mad continuity or like, they haven't like messed
around
with
the character.
You can pick
it up from anywhere
before.
Any story and start
like,
it's again,
not
yeah.
like there's, like, it's not like gospel or, I guess it's, yeah, I don't know.
But it's like, I'm going to be honest as well, I don't think, and I'm not to make a massive sweeping generalisation here, but I don't think the audience would react well to, because even when to it not being, you know, the typical fucking, it needs to be, yeah, I just don't think this is a massive, this is the only comparison I can make it to because it's my bread and butter. But like, when people talk about, you know, making the pool of contestants wider for Love Island and having more, like, I absolutely think diversity and representation is important. Like, diversity, absolutely. But when we talk about, like, let's say body size and whatever, I know the fan base is not, they're just, I know the reaction. And I think having that diversity and inclusion actually doesn't mean anything if there's no safeguarding in place, which I think that is a difficulty that I think the Bond franchise has as well, because it's like, you can't just land someone in there knowing that the fan base is made up of predominantly straight white men.
Yes.
And knowing how they can sometimes react to things. 100%. So I do get it. I don't really know who I'd like to see. I'm trying to think who else is new on the scene that would fit that bill. Is there anyone else? Any other wild cards in your head that you'd be like, be kind of gas?
This is not a wild card because it's literally what we were just talking about, the opposite of that. It's like going completely traditional. But
it's completely fine.
I watched that show Bodyguard and Richard Madden and that.
He's always been in the conversation. I was trying to think and I was getting him confused with Jonathan Bailey. Yeah, he'd be very good.
He's like, he's got it. Like those big shoulders and like his kind of, he looks like, it's the most traditional pick I could make, but he'd be there. Or wild cards.
Was talk of Dev Patel for a while, wasn't there?
He's too nice.
I would fucking love Dev Patel.
He's just got it's those puppy dog eyes. He's just a nice, I heard this, he's got a sweetness to him like that. You're like, I can't imagine him, you know,
someone a little rough around the edges.
You need someone with ice in their veins or who can turn that on. And I mean, again, he's an actor, you know, actors can do loads of things. But like, anytime you see Dev Patel, it's always like, look at that handsome, lovely, lovable chap.
Tom Hardy? No.
Love Tom Hardy. But he's a lunatic. Why would I want him to be playing lunatic criminals for the rest of his life. I don't want him to.
He's like too rough around the edges then. Okay.
And he's too much crack in like playing head the boss. You don't want to see him kind of do something, you know, let's face it, fucking pretty one note, you know, like Bond. You want him to kind of keep playing weird little Peaky Blinder lads.
Yeah.
Any more? Any other names?
I'm trying to think. No, I think that's it. Because Tom Hardy, I think, was bandied around for a while and then he kind of fell off the face of the earth. And I think people realised that probably not. But it will be interesting to see.
There was a name floated for ages and I would walk away from this. It's Tom Hiddleston. If they went...
Really?
God, no.
I love Tom Hiddleston. I think I feel sorry for him after all the Taylor Swift stuff more than anything. I don't think he would. He seems to be in his...
No, I don't either.
Well... we go back to the pride thing and the ego thing. It's a big thing to be able to say you did Bond.
Exactly.
But also, I take your point on Daniel Craig having a total banger doing the franchise. I feel like that has put a lot of people off. Mm-hmm. So why would you walk away if Tom Hiddleston was cast?
He's
a bit too nice as well.
Too nice. And he's like, he doesn't have the old sex appeal and the ice in the veins. He's just like, he's got the public schoolboy thing down, but he doesn't have and he's a good looking chap, but he doesn't have, I don't know. Again, it goes back to the Idris Elba and the Sean Connery thing. You want someone who's like kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
Tom Hiddleston is many things. Dangerous is not, I don't think, something you call him.
Taylor Swift would agree.
She'd be good for the theme tune. For Bond theme tune.
We barely touched on theme tunes. Is there anyone you'd love to see do it? Obviously, we had Billie Eilish just gone. Mm-hmm. Adele, probably the best one in a while. Oh, Sam Smith, people were...
I like it.
I didn't mind it either. And it seemed like people were really cold on it either at the time. And then I don't know if it was like a bit revisionist where they were like, no, well, shite, whatever. And then I don't know if it was just because of the movie. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, see, if a theme tune gets tied to a bad movie, it gets a bad... Some of the worst Bond movies are the best theme tunes. Diamonds Are Forever.
True.
Listen to Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds Are Forever. Forever. Yeah, I won't. Everyone knows how it goes. Is there anyone else you'd love to see do it?
I would love to see C-Matt. Get C-Matt in there.
Yes! Let's manifest it now.
Bond tune.
Oh my God. She would do a whopper one.
Yeah.
Imagine.
I know. And the video would be lit.
She would be Bond on it. She'd be doing the whole...
Robbie Williams was Bond in Millennium, was it? Remember
of course. Like,
in the field with the jetpack and all.
Yeah. Peter, what's your elevator pitch for anyone listening? To go away and basically watch this and for them to no longer consider On Her Majesty's Secret Service as a flop?
Outside of Casino Royale, it's got the best filmmaking of the whole series. It's got everything you want from a Bond film in terms of like the jokes and the gags and the action or whatever, done the best it's ever been done, but it's also probably one of like three with an actual emotional heart. And I think that emotional stuff has been done the best. So it's just a great time at the movies.
If people want to find out more about you, where are you? What are you doing? Anything to plug?
On the gram and
What's your handle?
Peter J. McGann.
Peter J. McGann. Very funny.
Same on Twitter.
You could put up any video and I won't have watched it. I'll just share it to my story because I know it's funny. I'm just like, I'm going to laugh at this.
I'm going to start testing now with like a slight...
You're going to be checking.
I do appreciate the old shares, you know, from my betters.
So good. Please check Peter out. Anything else? I don't know when this is coming out, so be careful of dates.
Okay, then I suppose keep
anything
an eye...
Anything from September maybe is good?
There's... Probably
are you going to be in anything?
Get Up GUTF, the Tony Cantwell and Shane Dan Brown morning show. All the episodes could be out by now. There's only like four of them. But if not, keep an eye out for them. And if they are out, go watch them because they're very funny.
Like, share, comment. They are extremely, extremely funny. Peter, it has been a pleasure to have you on Flop Culture. I'd love to have you back. I'm not going to say, because you pitched two things, and I'm not going to say the other thing in case you do come back and we talk about it. But a pleasure and can't wait to chat to you again.
This has been a blast. Thanks a million.
Peter McGann there speaking to me about On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which you can find somewhere to watch on the internet. They were on Prime, but I don't think any of them are on Prime now. Did Peter kill the Queen? A great question, and one we did not get to because we recorded that prior to her death. So questions still remain. Maybe he'll come back if he is not in hiding, which I'd imagine he is. I'd imagine he is. Finally, let's get into who is top of the flops this week.
You're a flop.
Top of the flops this week will come as no surprise to anyone who is also watching House of the Dragon. We've got two people taking the top spot this week, and it is Sir Criston, whatever the fuck his name is, and Queen Alicent Hightower from House of the Dragon. I've never met two fictional characters who are bigger dweebs, honestly. Because this week we've had the time jump, so we've had Emma D'Arcy and Olivia Cooke taking over in the roles of Rhaenyra and Alicent, respectively. And I mean, I said it on my Instagram, but every iota of feminism leaves my body when Alicent comes on screen because she's a jealous wagon and she's raging the shit to marry an old man, which not her fault. I get that. But you know what? Who do you think you are being friends with, Criston, who's also absolutely snapping now because Rhaenyra turned him down in a way, but also didn't, was like, hey, we can still have a thing. You could still be my little... side thing. And he was like, absolutely not understanding the importance of the crown and upholding that. Obviously she's the heir, she has to stay there. Now the two of them are absolute busy mates, excuse me, snivelling, walking around the halls of the castle, bitching about everyone. Get a life. Also, like, Alicent and Viserys' children, like, are we surprised that they are also weirdo dweebs, weirdo evil dweebs? They give me evil vibes. I think that's what's being foreshadowed. Haven't read the books, have no intention of reading the books. The vibes are not good. Absolutely heinous, septic vibes from that family. And I feel like they're going to get together. Do we think there is Sir Criston and Alicent are going to get together? That's my fear. And I'll be cross, to be honest. I will be cross. Anyway, enjoying the series though. Is anyone else? I am enjoying it. Very much looking forward to seeing what happens next. Daddy Damon, always in my heart, even though he's another exceptionally evil man. But yeah, top of the flops, Sir Criston and Queen Alicent Hightower. Get a life, respectively. I don't care that you're fictional characters. Get lives, get hobbies. Thank you so much for listening. We are on Instagram and TikTok under flopculture_pod. You can get in touch at helloflopculture@gmail.com. If you leave a 5-star review and your name or nickname on Apple Podcasts, I will recommend a bop or a flop to you. You can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify. Today's bop is for, let me bring up your name, Dave9389. And they say, delighted to have Fiona Walla back in my eardrums, queen of pop culture. Can't wait for more eps. It's very much appreciated, Dave. That is a reference to the cameo I got from Sonia Morgan, in which she unequivocally cannot pronounce my name. It's extremely entertaining. Dave, your bop this week is Diddy Dirty Money, Diddy's ill-fated supergroup that spawned not a lot of hits, to be honest. He did try. The three of them did try, didn't they? They had Coming Home with Skylar Grey. But that's not what I'm going to recommend to you. Just go and check out the discography, because you know what? It's not long. It's actually really not long. There's maybe like 4 songs. Hello, Good Morning. Ass on the Floor with Swizz Beatz. excellent. I'll get you motivated. It'll get you rightly motivated for the weekend. Appreciate having you here, Dave. Hope you stick around. Hope the rest of you stick around for next week's episode. We will see you then. Today's podcast has been edited by Adam Shannon. Artwork, as always, by Brian Lambert. And I will see you next week. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.